Welcome to Spectrum, a daily public affairs presentation of WCSN. And now, here's Spectrum, the talk of Mercer and Auglaize counties.
Welcome, everybody, to Spectrum today. We've got a special guest in studio today. Really doesn't need much of an introduction. Your bowling coach, head coach of girls and boys for Coldwater Cavaliers, Rick Hardings, everybody.
Well, hey, thanks for having me, Lee. Had a tough time getting here, but it all worked out really good.
You know, something about being both, you know, obviously the head bowling coach and being a part of bowling for as long as you have, but owning Playmore Lanes now for how long that you've been with Playmore just after you bought it from your dad.
Yeah, I started in 85, so I've been there 40 years from the start, right after I graduated high school. So me and Patty bought the business. It'll be 20 years this coming October. So yeah, kind of good stuff going on this year. It's 2026. We're going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary this whole year. So we're really excited about that. We got some fun stuff going to go happen this spring, this summer. So we're really looking forward to it. So yeah, 50 years, hard to believe.
And all of this just ties into, you know, bowling at the end of the day, all the way up, starting at the youth league, working its way up to high school. When did high school youth bowling, when did all these things start just kind of blending together to get us to where you are now?
Yeah, years ago. I bowled in youth leagues years ago, but it was, I was young and I bowled with the older kids. I mean, I've been around the sport since I've been in the second grade. We moved to Coldwater when I was in fifth grade in 76. We always had youth leagues, but I bowled the older kids, but it was never full. I mean, we never had more than 16 lanes. There might have been 8 or 10, and it was competitive, but nothing like today. I mean, my dad started the high school bowling in our area with like 8 bowling centers and 8 different teams, more kind of like Mercer County, Auglaize County in 1999. He always tells the story. He was sweeping the floor one morning, and how can we get these kids out to bowl other teams and try to be a little more competitive? And just so we called the proprietors around, and we just kind of threw a thing together. We did 8 teams and did like 8 weeks in the middle of the winter. And we did it on Sundays, believe it or not, back in the day. But and that kind of progressed to 10 teams, and we invited a few more schools in, kept it on Sundays, but you know, that's not perfect. People like to go to church, and you know, that's a day to maybe not do as much. But so over the years, we kind of like moved it into Saturdays. And then we had 12 teams, and then we kind of invited the Lima area schools and some, you know, down south, Ansonia, Mississinewall Valley, and Rushi. And, we maxed out one year, many years in a row. We had 20 schools. Then we ended up going like a north division, south division, and I was the guy doing the scheduling, and it got a little crazy. It really kind of got to a point where when WBL kind of decided to make their sport a recognized sport in WBL, and then all the WBL schools kind of dropped out of our conference. So the 20 went from like 20 to 12. And then we went to the MAC commissioner, the MAC ADs, and kind of said, you know, would you guys be interested in maybe making bowling a MAC sport? So then, you know, it took a couple of years. We kind of did it on our own just to see how it would play out. We had our own kind of side standings and side stats. And then the ADs really took it on and started talking more about it. And then they decided to, you know, take it on. And then we kind of had the other schools, like there was 4 schools left down south that kind of got left out in the wind, maybe a couple of schools in Lima. But, you know, the best thing that's happened that the WBL took on bowling in the winter and also the MAC. So it just makes our sport, you know, in 2014, you know, they made it 2 divisions. But in 2007 was when OHSA really came on board and made it a recognized sport. That just took it to another level to where these schools, these administrators kind of knew that this is a big deal. I mean, we kind of get a little bit of a bad rap, like not a sport and stuff like that. And that kind of makes me mad. But, you know, over the years we've proved in that 07, when we had that first state championship that OHSA held, the cool thing about it is that we won the first one ever and St. Henry finished second. Though both of those teams are out of our center at Playmore Lanes and Coldwater. It gives me goosebumps thinking about it because that's just, you know, that was all one division. We had schools from Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus, big enrollment schools that we kind of like all knocked off, and it was just us 2 in the finals. And I remember doing a press conference with a couple of my senior bowlers, and one was my nephew, Tyler James, and Jim Stout was the head coach of St. Henry at the time. And it's just, we did the press conference together. You know, most times you win a state title, you have one school doing a press conference. And then later you do the other press conference with the other school and just talk to some players. And what do you think? Congratulations. And I said, heck, let's just do it all together because we know each other. We practice together side by side. And so it's kind of a cool thing in full circle. We have, you know, the girls have 5 state titles now and the boys have 4. So now today, you know, now the cool thing about it is the MAC took it on as a sport. Not every team has bowling, but, you know, I think New Knoxville might be coming in next year. That's kind of a neat thing. So we have 8 boys teams, 7 girls teams. So everybody's got boys and girls except for Sandra does not have a girls program. New Knoxville might come in with a boys program, and hopefully they come in with both eventually. And that just keeps growing, and it's just it's good for the sport and good for everybody in general.
It's been amazing, even from the time that I was in high school, to see where high school bowling is now compared to, you know, 07 when it first kind of really started picking up. When I was in high school, from graduated 2010, even partook in Western Ohio High School Bowling Conference through Greenville, you know, my junior year in high school, to come up and now bowl against teams like Coldwater, you know, Marion Local, Versailles, St. Henry. It was tough. It was our first 2 years as a program, but it was an eye opener and of something that is not your traditional side of sports. And we wanted to do it. And you did say something. And when it comes to bowling and the tournaments, and the biggest misconception parents and kids have about bowling as a sport, what do you think that would be in your own?
Yeah, I mean, we just get a bad rap because everybody thinks league bowling, you know, beer drinking, smoking cigarette. Well, we don't smoke in the house anymore, but it's like any other sport, hand-eye coordination. You know, you got to be able to stay on your feet, slide, balance, hit a target, you know, get the ball to hook the proper way, to go through the pins the proper way. It's like people don't see that. Most recreational, you know, bowlers that come out on the weekend just, you know, they grab one of our alley balls and they chuck it down the middle and, you know, they just think it's, you know, that's the way it should be. But you know, you're a bowler, I'm a bowler, and we teach these kids to, I mean, the two-handed thing is, you know, really, really popular now. And in my eyes, it's, I can't do it. I've tried it. I mean, I'll get hurt. I mean, these younger kids are a little more limber, and there's more of them because they just can create more energy and more ball speed and just like more torque, and the ball hooks more. But I mean, a big percentage of our kids are two-handed. So it does take a lot of muscle memory and, you know, just athletic ability, believe it or not. And that's what we think, but we do get a little bit of a bad rap on that.
Yeah, between athletic ability and I think just as if any other sport, there's a little bit of science to the game as well. You've got to understand, you know, things out on the lane. There's oil patterns that come into play. But just beyond that, it's really just shot making, being able to throw the same ball over and over and over and being consistent as possible.
Yeah, repeating shots and then like board, and we teach our kids board, like there's arrows every 5 boards is an arrow, 5, 10, 15, 20, you know, the middle arrow is 20. Recreational bowlers don't think of that, but our sport's different because there's an oil pattern and there's lots of oil patterns out there. And we can get into that a little bit later about some things going on, but you know, we can't see the oil pattern. I mean, it's not like you're going to the Elks, like if the high school kids have a match at a meet at the Elks, you can see the wind blowing because the trees are moving. They know where the pin's at possibly because there's a stick in that hole there. But, you know, us, we're like, where's the oil at and not at? Where's the ball? You know, so when we practice, when we warm up, when we practice during the week, we look and we know, we kind of know. I tell the kids, I have a pattern out there. Let's see who can figure it out the quickest. But, you know, we practice farther right. And if the ball hooks a lot, we know there's a little bit less oil. So we got to move left. If the ball don't hook much at all, then they might have to change balls because like a lot of our guys have 8, 12 bowling balls and our girls have, you know, 3 to 6 bowling balls for different like shots, whatever. But to whoever gets lined up the fastest, whoever can repeat shots are usually ones that start our matches and then we'll stay in longer. If you have somebody missing the head pin the first 5 practice shots, there's a good chance they're not going to start or maybe not get in the first 2 games. But, you know, we do teach it. We do kind of sell our sport as nobody sits a bench. We do get kids in as much as possible. They do not all will start all the time, but you know, we do 2 regular games, 5 Baker games. Baker games, they'll bowl most of those sometimes. But really, it just depends on who you're bowling and how close the match is. If it's really close, you got to have your studs in there. You got to have your better girls in there bowling that can keep the ball around the pocket to try to win the match. So it's no different than, you know, trying to score as many points or score as many touchdowns to try to win a game as just try to knock out as many pins and win the match.
Obviously, you know, yes, you said the goal is to, you know, get everybody on the lane. And as a individual sport and team strategy, how do you balance the two? Like, what does that look like? Because you obviously have kids that are now probably eager or on their way to maybe being, you know, high average for the year, bowler of the year. How do you have wiggle room in that? Like, you know, I really want him or her to earn this award, but you know, if they start having a bad game or a bad week, how does all of that play into if you're in a big match, you might have to take them out?
Yeah, and that has happened here recently. There is like bowler of the year. That is a prestigious award to win in the MAC. Player of the year, first team all conference, second team all conference. The coaches see the stats. So it is different this year. You get the highest game bowled on that pair of lanes gets 10 points. And then the second high game is 9, and then the lowest game gets 1 point. If you take somebody out of that match, they don't get any points. So like last week, we had a little bit of a closer match with St. Henry, and I did take a couple bowlers out that didn't bowl real good. And I thought the condition was a little harder than normal at their sales, which was great. I like them when they're a little bit harder, and then you have to make shots. But we do have some kids that average way higher than others. We have some kids on the bubble of making varsity. So our goal with me and like Wes Steinecker and Kyle Bruins, my two assistants, you know, our girls, we have 8. So right there, that's our team moving forward in postseason. But we have 22 boys, and we do keep stats of the whole season. A JV match, a varsity match, we keep a stat sheet. Me and Kyle, like we practiced today at 3:00. Even though the weather is bad, but we are coming in and working on it because we have a big match with Versailles this weekend. We're going to talk to the kids a little bit about, you know, it's a team effort, but some people might be bowling as an individual trying to, you know, get their average higher. And is it showing, or is it like we need more, a little more team camaraderie to win the match? And our end goal is to win the MAC tournament, win the MAC overall, and then really get amped up for sectionals district. And our end goal is to win a state title.
And speaking, I think really just based off time and direction of where we can go with this is, you know, how many more weeks is left of the season?
Just 2 weeks in regular season.
And then I'm looking, I think, as long as my dates are right here, sectionals, Division II, right?
Yes.
Is February 8th and the 15th. And where's that going to be at?
So our area will be, we're at Minster. So I think it's the 10th and 12th. It's changed a little bit this year because last year the weather got a little crazy on us and we had to cancel the girls sectional. And we had to make it up the next week. So that really got to where we bowled the following Tuesday, and then the girls advanced the districts, or any of the girls that advanced the districts had to bowl in 2 days up in Toledo. So there was really no more time to practice, no time to get set up to get ready to go. So the Northwest District Board looked at the whole scenario. We're going to bowl Tuesday, the second week of February. The boys will bowl on Tuesday. The girls will bowl on Thursday. So that gives us a Wednesday and a Friday for snow days, if we have to make up, because the following week we'll go Tuesday, Thursday, and we flip flop. The girls will go first, the boys will go second. That'll be the Tuesday, Thursday, the third week of February. But a lot of like the Southwest, like Fort Recovery, Versailles, they're in the MAC conference, but they go Southwest. So they'll go to Huber Heights, to the Dayton area districts. We'll be at Beaverview Bowl. So, you know, I look at it, who's at our district? We have 14 teams, 12 girls teams, 14 boys teams. Who's our competitors? Who do we got to watch out for? Who do we got to compete against? And there's some schools that kind of know they're on the bubble, like 4 teams advanced to the district tournament. So there's 4 sectionals in the Northwest District. So there's 16 teams at district. So that's a nice accomplishment to get to the district tournament. But who's your competitor? So that's all posted online. And I know not just me. I mean, there's a lot of coaches that are gearing up for who's going to be your 8-man roster. You know, me and Kyle Bruns, my assistant, you know, we've talked again last night. We're talking today at practice, like who is close. We have to make a decision here pretty quick. So once we get to we have Versailles this week, and we will finish the season next week at Minster, the last week of the regular season against Fort Recovery. So 2 big matches. Yeah,
those are fun. Those are 2 really big matches. Yeah. Wow.
It's just the way it played out this year. I don't know how. I mean, the schedule changes every year. We have the schedule done for the next 10 years, and every year is different. So sometimes we might bowl Versailles at Versailles, and that does give a little advantage to Versailles, but that doesn't happen every year. So like this year, we bowl them at our place. So that's the advantage for us.
Wanted to talk just a little bit more about sectionals districts and more of the, you know, the pressure. And these two questions kind of go hand in hand. But what separates teams that advance from teams that barely miss in postseason bowling? Some teams might look at strikes or maybe avoiding opens. Is that usually the determining factor when it comes down to teams that, you know, make it through sectionals and then on the districts and eventually find themselves at state?
Oh, absolutely. Consistency. I mean, if you can not have as many opens, I mean, just clean frames and just filling frames and just trying to bowl the best you can. I mean, the standings are posted after game one. You kind of know, like, if we didn't bowl very good the first game and now all of a sudden we're 30 or 40 pins out of the 4th spot, we got to go. You know, then a coach might decide to make no changes or put some people in that he thinks that can excel to try to get him above the top, like into the top four. But definitely it is, it's three regular games, six Bakers. So it's a little extra bowling than a regular match. Usually we do 2 and 6, 2 and 5. And in tournaments, 3. So we in the sectionals, nobody really crowns a champion in sectionals. We will announce the high score. But there's 4 teams advance. Anybody not on an advancing team will advance as an individual to the. So then we have 16 teams to the districts. We'll also have 16 individuals that did not advance on a team. So there is more opportunities. So those individuals that advance to the district tournament, they have just the same advantage to try to get to state as what the regular teams there have bowlers there as well. Just the top 3 out of the district will make it to the state finals. A little harder. I mean, there's 16 teams times you got 8 guys on a roster or girls, and then you have the 16 individuals. So that will determine who goes to state by their 3-game series.
And a couple of things to wrap it up here, Rick. What is maybe the biggest mental mistake kids make in the postseason? What have you seen over your coaching career that just is like, yep?
Pressure. Not being able to handle the pressure. I've been very fortunate to have some really good athletes, really good bowlers that bowl year round and really work hard at it and do a lot of tournaments like in the off season, like big time tournaments. That really gets them set up for this. I mean, our season starts out, you know, some non-conference matches. We'll go to the kickoff tournament. We had really good success there in Columbus. We'll go through all the MAC. We'll have more non-conference against some of the really good WBL schools to try to get ready to handle the pressure. But nothing's better than postseason. When you get to the MAC tournament and try to win a MAC title, and you know the following week we'll have a tournament in Columbus to kind of gear up a little bit more. But then after that, it's the MAC tournament. Try to gear it for that. But, I mean, it's just a whole nother level. Everything goes from here way up here to try to, you know, the pressure. And I think that the end of the year is more fun because it means so much more. I think a lot of our bowlers are just bowling right now. They're more worried about their average, you know, and then where do they stand at in the points for player of the year. We don't talk to them about that, but the MAC ADs, when they agreed to do this new point system, we will post it the day of the MAC tournament. It'll be posted at Speedway Lanes this year. They're hosting. So kids will know where they stand at. And then so we're going to bowl like a game, 2 games, and then they'll get more points. So not just against that pair. So the boys, whoever has the highest game, the first round will get 40 points. So that could make or break, or it could leapfrog some people up into the second team or first team. So it'll be exciting. I mean, it's been fun to watch because we now post it out. We sent an email out to all the coaches, and I see it every week. I know who's leading. I don't talk to nobody about it, but except for my assistant coach. He wants to see it. And then, you know, just to see how these kids will react, who will rise and who might, you know, it's no different than golf. You know, there's a kid leading this past fall that shot a really high 80 or low 90s that might have cost him from first team to second team or the player of the year. You know, that's just part of sports.
Wow. That was hopefully you had your ears open because you just got pretty much a fire hydrant exposure to all things cold water bowling. Rick, I know once the season all concludes, hopefully with a state championship at the end, you guys do a couple fundraisers through at the end of the year. There's kind of the summer. Maybe just talk to people, maybe a couple ways how they can support cold water bowling.
Yeah, cold water and St. Henry both bowl out of our center. You know, it's just we do a fundraiser at the end of the year to try to raise money to help. You know, we do some tournaments and some travel. You know, our school is very fortunate. Our school does help us out quite a bit, but not everything. We give the kids some T-shirts. We just some little things. We do a fundraiser. We'll sell raffle tickets and stuff like that. But at the end of the season, we'll run a youth tournament at our place, and we give out some really good scholarship money to the youth kids that do sign up. They come from all over the state for that. But the biggest thing is our youth program has grown so much the last many, many years. Probably because of the success of our high school program. The Kids Bowl Free program starts May 1st and goes through August 31st. So the Kids Bowl Free program has been huge just to get the kids introduced to the sport, to come out and bowl 2 free games. All you got to do is pay for shoe rental. We do sell a summer pass for the kids that are a little more competitive, but that's all in the summertime. And we're very fortunate to have kids around our area that do come over and buy those passes and take advantage of the 2 free games.
Awesome. Rick, good luck with the rest of the season. Good luck in the postseason. And I'm sure I'll see you, if not before Sunday, I'll see you Sunday. We got cold water PTO, right?
All day long, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. It's going to be a great busy day.
All right. Thank you, Rick. We'll be right back, everybody. again, we want to thank Rick Hardings for coming in and chatting with us. We'll have Doug Berkey on tomorrow on Friday for Spectrum. And he'll talk to us about things going on in Coldwater.
The best variety.
Turn it up all the way to 11. 96.